Basic idea, obviously Mental Health Week is coming up, it's here and all, and there's a lot of awareness being cast upon this week to sort of highlight the issues of mental health. And about 18 months ago I had sat with you to talk about your dream and what you wanted to do to help people with addiction and recovery, and lo and behold, 18 months later, there's a reality behind it. You have a studio. You're doing so much in the community with different gyms and stuff. So I wanted to get talking to you to see, right, where has it gone? What's new? What have you done? What has been a struggle? And what transitions have been really easy? Just sort of give people kind of a rundown of from where it started now and until today.
From the start. So we spoke, you were right, 18 months ago. And I think we sat in two parts of my house at one point. And it was just a concept. It was a conversation. I'd set a Facebook page at that mm-hmm. point. And there was an idea. And lo and behold, we're a year and a half down the line. And we're a fully fledged non-profit organization. We have a board of directors. We have a team of 10 people. We have our own place. We have an equipped studio, and we've had 27 people through our 6-week recovery program. And out of those 27, we have 20 still active members that train with us twice a week, all in recovery from substance abuse, whether drugs or alcohol or both. And just doing really well in life, and mm-hmm. they're getting fitter, they're getting healthier. It's affecting their families, their children, the local community. And that's the reality of what happened in literally what feels like a blink of an eye from that original conversation, and a lot of work in the background since then. But it's just been class. Been phenomenal,
a lot of highs and lows, I would say. And can you give me a few examples of maybe some of the highs and of the journey so far?
I suppose becoming credible was a big thing in this, because for me, reputation's always been really important and something I've worked really hard at. And a lot of people start things out of a desire to want to help, which is a great thing. But for me, unless the groundwork was put in, that was researched, and it worked and it was done right, then I didn't think that it would last. So I worked really hard at putting the groundwork in. And it has, and we're here. So the highlight for me is the fact that it's now seen as a reputable and credible recovery service in Derry and further afield now. I have connections now in England and Scotland and further afield again, which is really good. But I can't just give you, a lot of people have gone through the programs and they've all had different wins. Mm-hmm. And for some person, that win could just be to be sober for a year. For some, it could be getting their kids back. And we've seen it all. So for me to give you one specific example of a win, it's hard to say. I am watching people change daily, weekly, and seeing people, getting children back that they were having no contact with, or are working or studying, all the things that they weren't doing prior to starting the program, and equally seeing their family come back together and be happy. It's really fulfilling. I love what I do. It's really, really, it's really great.
Brilliant, man. And you're any sort of hard times, struggles that have sort of really thought, is this going to be worth it? Or maybe not even so much setting it up, but I mean, in any sort of aspect of ARC Fitness so far.
So the challenge was, I set this up myself whilst I was working full time, not right. expecting the demand that literally landed on top of me. So the unfortunate struggle that I had was, I created a service that I couldn't fulfill the need for. And that really annoyed me, because there's a lot of services that people struggle to get, and I didn't want to be another one of those. But the reality was, I had a house and a mortgage and a family and a job. And tried my best, and we still can't get through everybody on our waiting list, but we're working on it. We're putting that in place. That's always been a struggle for me because I've always wanted this to be accessible. And then, sure, COVID-19 came along and took all of the stuff that we were doing out of the gym, and we were forced to adapt really quickly. So a lot of the stuff that we do is community orientated, and that always meant that we were doing stuff in the community in coffee shops, and we were meeting up, and that was all forced to stop. So yes, Zoom came along and we were able to do things. We went from having 2 physical classes a week to 6, and an additional 2 online group check-ins a week. So although we were able to put those in place, the physical communication and the physical meeting wasn't there. And that was a real struggle, because a lot of people struggling with substance misuse and addictions and stuff are quite isolated anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then COVID came along and it was a different type of isolation.
I think everybody kind of knows a little bit about that, but obviously trying to cope with something such as addiction, it's going to be in another level, I suppose. And that physical, just being in someone's presence and then having that conversation is massive. Zoom and stuff, you'll do enough to get by, but it's not definitely not the same, and that's something that I've even noticed myself and yourself, I'm supposed, like, over COVID and the restrictions of going out and meeting people and that, you know.
And there's something about being, this is why the community aspect of what I do was really important. There's something about being around people in the same situation to give you strength and hope. And those interactions, those physical interactions, are so important for your own self-esteem and your own self-worth and your own growth. To have that over a screen, you know, it just wasn't the same. And it was funny, and I found people that were maybe only recently sober did really well, where some people who were sober maybe a long time struggled. So it was quite interesting, you know. And I think because we were fixed on our structures and our routines, and these are really important, and we need them. And then all of a sudden, they're not there, and you're creating new ones again from scratch. So that was quite challenging, but you know, we got through it. We were very lucky to receive funding from the National Lottery at the time, which enabled us then to increase everything that we were doing. And that's when the thoughts for today came along. So I was actually reading James Smith's book.
Yes.
And I love him, right? And he was talking, I can come across quite confident at times, but I actually would be quite a socially anxious person. And being on video was really uncomfortable for me. So coming under lockdown, I knew I would have to be on Zoom and be a bit more confident. And I was reading the book, and he obviously had similar issues. And it was, if you're going to be uncomfortable, just make a video. Just every day. Just do it and see what happens. So I started it, and I have 130 thoughts for the day plus more since I started. So that was a good thing that came out of it. So it pushed you to kind of
get out of your comfort zone.
Challenge your comfort zones.
Mm-hmm.
We adapted pretty well. But what also happened then is our community grew wider than Derry. So we started running recovery workouts, and because of Zoom, we were able to access recovery services in England and in Scotland and in the South, and just invite them to take part in a massive workout in your home. And we did that twice through lockdown, which was really encouraging as well. So I always want to build this community of people in recovery. So it's not just about getting sober and then getting on with your life. It's about being part of something bigger than yourself.
Yeah. And like, I'm going to say it's going to be a franchise, but sort of take the template that you've sort of created and kind of pass it on. Is that what you want to kind of achieve?
Do you know what I find, right? There is a lot of people out there in recovery that are in gyms or in running clubs or jiu-jitsu. There's a lot of people out there, but nobody talks about it.
Yeah.
So if you can create an environment where it's all right to be in recovery, and it's not shameful, and it's not stigmatizing, that's all I have done. I have created a space for people to be okay just to be who they are. They may have had their struggles, but it doesn't define who they are. And they're coming together with shared experiences and just growing. But the additional thing that I have managed to do over lockdown is I connected with Learning Pool, which is a learning and development company here in Derry, online company, and they have helped me, and I put together now an ARC Academy. So what happens is, if you do the program, the physical program is here, you also do a 6-week online addiction recovery program. Mm-hmm. So you get daily content, there's daily reflections, there's worksheets, there's things they work through every day. So you're getting hit from two angles.
Yeah.
You're physically getting fitter. You're physically becoming part of a community, but you're also learning how to manage this thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes it different.
And that's only for someone who's on the program. That's not sort of out there at the minute. We're working free on anybody it. To access.
We're working on it.
Okay.
But yes, it will be.
Aye.
So if you're not in Derry or you're somewhere else, then yes, you can jump on, do the 6-week program. You still get access to the online community. Of course, that's how it works. We have closed accountability groups. We still have group check-ins. You still have access to all of that. So that's what I'm working on now at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
How can I open this up to a wider audience and affect as many people as possible?
The one thing you did say there is the people maybe has they can't really feel or don't feel that they can open up about certain things. Why do you think that is? Or, you know, is there if maybe shamed it, or is there maybe, you know, whenever you're maybe even talking to your parents or family members, why would you feel that you can't open up to them people, or am I getting that wrong?
No, you're getting it right. I think that with this one is addiction was always seen as a moral feeling. It was always seen as it's your fault. So, you know, and the discrimination and the stigma that goes with that as a preventative, it stops people reaching out for help. And I have never met somebody who is struggling with drugs or alcohol, a real struggle with drugs or alcohol, that has decided that it would be a good idea by choice. And nobody asks for it. Nobody decides that, you know what, I remember thinking, I didn't decide that, you know, I need to wake up today and I need to drink that half glass of vodka so I don't shake in the morning. That wasn't a choice. But because we view it as a moral feeling and we blame, you're there because of what you did, it's your fault, people don't want to come forward. And as a society, how we talk about it, we use words. And like this relates to mental health as well, like junkie, alcohol, all these words are so stigmatizing that people won't come forward for help. And whether it's drugs or alcohol, it just happens to be whatever's there at the time. Mine was drugs and alcohol. It could have very easily been something else.
Yeah.
You know, it's what it's serving a purpose. It's what it's doing. What it's helping you with. And that's how it starts. It starts as a crutch. And then it becomes unmanageable.
And how do you see people breaking down that barrier to feel okay to talk about it? Do you see it mostly in your program, and how does that happen in your program, and can you sort of give an example outside of the program where you felt that you've seen it?
So I am super transparent about my journey, about the stuff that's happened in my life. I'll talk to anybody on the wall about it, because I think, you know, change comes through conversation. And awareness comes through conversation. So the more that we can be open and honest and talk about these things that are happening in a lot of people's lives, we just don't know about it because nobody talks about it. If we can continue to do that and create a space where it's safe to be open and honest, and it's all right to have a struggle, but if you're actually doing some work on it, then that's equally okay too. Then that's what I hope to do. So changing the conversation has always been a big thing for me. This is only a start of that. The online stuff that we do really helps. The videos help. I run monthly ARC Social online events now. I got funding through the policing and the community safety partnerships. So every month I run an event where I get a speaker in. I speak a little bit about ARC. The speaker will come on. And I mean, this week we've got somebody from the PCSP, Community Safety Wardens, coming on. Just to open this whole thing up through conversation and awareness. It's the same as mental health or Mental Health Week. Why do we have them? To create awareness.
Yeah.
And the more aware we are, then the better we can deal with things, and the better we can deal with things, the easier it is for people to come forward.
How does that compare to the statistics, though? You know, with drug and addiction, that awareness, and, you know, is it helping? Could we do more? Or, you know, even the rate of maybe, you know, I go and they like suicide right. People like. Is it? Can we do more, or what? You know, with the.
Could you do more? I mean, yes.
You can always do more.
I think there's a lot of things out there. I think it's, again, knowledge. So what is out there? You find out. Are you're connected with people that know what's out there. Like the community organizations in Derry are phenomenal. There are so many programs and supports out there, and voluntary organizations and non-profit organizations that are out there to help. And it's just about raising awareness of them. If people know that there's things there, then they can actually, you know, reach out to them. I remember, for example, whenever I was going through, at the tail end of this before I got sober, going through the kind of worst of it, my parents didn't know what to do because they weren't aware of what support was available, kind of for me, but also for them. And that's a challenge. So if you're going through something and you don't know where to turn, you don't reach out. You know, families get frustrated.
Yeah.
And I think statistically it's hard to put it on, but I do think the biggest driver and a lot of the things that are going on is a distinct lack of hope. And I think that people fall into that place where maybe it's drugs or alcohol, or maybe it's depression, and they don't see a hope of a way out. And that's where I think it's our role to provide hope that change is possible. You know, who you are and in your current circumstances will not define you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you're at now. If you're addicted or physically dependent to drugs and alcohol, you don't necessarily have to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can bring a bit of hope around and show you that it can be different,
mm-hmm.
then I think we can see a massive change.
The drugs and alcohol seem to be like maybe more of a coping mechanism. Would you say that? So underlying, what sort of things is coming through you once you kind of get in and talking to people and they kind of open up? You can't sort of stack them from 1 to 5, like, but I mean, in general, like, it could be down to work, or is it relationships, or is it just being able to manage their own thoughts? What is it that you sort of have over the last 18 months and in your career, like, found?
Anxiety.
Yeah.
Self-confidence, self-worth, self-esteem, stress, pressure, stress at work, stress at school, social media stress. These are all things that have increased even in the last 10 to 15 years. I'm not saying they're new things. Well, some of them maybe are from a technological point of view, but these stressors have all been there. But they're escalating in nature. So what happens is, you know, people usually, and I usually tell people, usually either use drugs or alcohol for these reasons. One, to feel good, because they don't. One, to feel better, because it helps them. One, to do better. You take the gym, for example, or because the people around them are doing it too. But what happens is eventually they become reliant on them to do those things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same for reasons that they have to stop, because it takes them to that point where they can't use their own abilities anymore to manage. I was a highly anxious kid. Like, I didn't have a major trauma in my childhood. I was just anxious. I was bullied at school. I blame my mum because I had a really stupid haircut. and I was so anxious. So the second I got the opportunity to taste alcohol and drugs, it was like, this was great. This helped me be less anxious, helped my self-esteem. I was more confident.
Mm.
And so I think that's a lot of the underlying reasons. It's for those really core things about us that we're just not secure in.
And see, before somebody turned to drugs or alcohol, what things do you think they could do to help reduce that anxiety or that stress before sort of turning to something that helps for a short term? Do you know what I mean? A lot of work would probably need to be done for someone before they kind of turn towards drinking alcohol or whatever. But is there things that you would say that you could do? This is just in general to avoid that escalation to that point.
I think we need to start looking at resilience. I think we need to start creating resilient kids. You know, that are kids that are aware of failure being learning instead of a really bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids that learn through experience and positively, that can talk about it, that we are open, that we're encouraging our children to talk about their feelings. I grew up, we didn't talk about our feelings. We didn't come home and sit around the table and talk about good things, bad, sadness. It wasn't done. Where now, I think we need to encourage that because it's a massive part of our development. It's really encouraging to see a lot more wellness programs. you take, there's a few secondary schools now locally that are actually incorporating a wellness program into their curriculum, which is brilliant, to enable children to know how to be still and settle and self-regulate and breathe mm-hmm. and manage their stress levels. It's great, because we never had that.
No.
You know, we didn't. So I think we need to be looking at a lot of these alternatives. You know, health and fitness. I say, access to green spaces, like, you know, access to team sports.
Five a side or whatever.
Access to stuff that's not behind a screen, that's outside and fresh air. Now I'm not saying go back and start building your tree huts. I'm just saying get outside.
Maybe you should.
You know, I think these things, there's, you know, it's a massive, massive area filled with, you know, there's loads of different tangents that you could go off. And I do think it needs to start with resilience and improving self-esteem and self-worth at a younger age, because if you can do that, then you shouldn't then be having to deal with those levels of abuse, substance abuse then, you know. And sometimes bad things happen, you know, we can't underwrite that, of course there are, but you know, if we can help people earlier, I think we wouldn't be dealing with the fallout that we are now.
And people just kind of accepting maybe who they are and the thoughts and the feelings that they're having, as you say. It's a good way of,
it's okay to be you, like, you know, it's all right,
and it's all right to say no to certain things, or you don't have to follow the crowd, or
no. I get so upset because it took me so long to figure that out. I got sober at 30. I know you look at me in surprise because you're like, 30, right? Because I look really young. But like, I think, look at all that wasted time of, you know, not liking who I was and thinking there was something wrong. Like, I was bullied at school, so therefore I technically thought there must be something wrong. And then they love the rest of your adolescent life thinking there's something wrong with me. It's such wasted time. I think if we were more comfortable with who we are, and as a, you know, as a community, as a society, we were more accepting of people, I think that's a good thing.
Of course, 100%. Let me just sort of take a wee look at my notes. Is there certain, see, in that sort of scenario, I'm thinking about, you know, I had a conversation with a guy, it just, randomly, he used another service in the town, and they give him a way of thinking about things and processing things, because we don't normally have them. But they give this person five questions. He says, right, well, what happened? Okay, write it down. What's the worst thing that can happen from this? Write it down. Or what's the best thing that can happen? You know, it's getting a way to maybe process and break things down. But do you offer that? Is that one way of you would be talking to people and kind of helping them understand, you know, what is that something that's in your program?
Yep, so we actually have two fully accredited and registered therapists outside of myself. So I actually work as an addiction nurse therapist. So outside of that, I have we have a CBT therapist, so cognitive behavioral therapist. And whenever people come to us and they're really struggling with anxiety or depression, then we cover the cost of their sessions. And they, you know, they get a bit of help and support in trying to manage that. We also have another trained counsellor, and he's also a dynamic running therapist. So not only is his background in counselling, he also does it whilst he's outside. So we have access to that that professional support also. For obviously, we have the constraints of time and the size of the organization that we are, but we offer people, you know, and that's, I think that's what's different about us. We come at this from quite a professional angle. So not only have I personally got the lived experience, but also being a nurse, mental health nurse, and an addiction nurse therapist, the people that we have on our team are really professional and skilled people. You know, our volunteers and our coaches, we have mental health nurses, trainee mental health nurses in there, trainee counsellors. So the people that I've built around me are the sort of people that can offer the help that a lot of the guys that come through our door require. Mm-hmm. Now, we can't do everything. We recognise our limitations, but we have an exceptional level of understanding, and we're able to signpost people really well, which is really good as well, you know.
Yeah, I want to there's a couple of things I want to touch on is like your community and like the waiting list and stuff that you have is how do you actually get on the program? Is that's something I want to talk about? And the community. I want to firstly sort of touch on that because you use other places around the town. Do you want to mention a few of them places so that people can kind of be aware of, oh, maybe I can go there and, you know, is there anything?
So in terms of us, so how people access us, we are a self-referral service just now. So basically, when you go on to our social media channels or onto our website, there's a link that takes you to register your interest for the program. Now, it also states that there is a waiting list, and we try our best to get through that as much as possible. But also what is happening now is we're getting a lot of referrals sent to us from GP practices, from social workers, from mental health practitioners, probation, PSNI. People are starting to recognize that what we're doing is a good thing, and we're starting to receive more and more referrals.
Mm-hmm.
But what that does is that increases our waiting list.
Yes.
Because we're currently at capacity. I have recently gone down to part-time. I changed my contract at work, so I'm now working more days in ARC. With the hope, obviously, of that moving forward to be a more permanent change. But again, this depends on many things. Funding being one of them. So that's how people can access us. Sometimes we get funding from particular organizations. For example, recently we got it from the Police and Community Safety Partnership. And it's specifically to run programs for people from certain areas. And that can be frustrating to people who are on a waiting list that aren't from that area. But we have to fulfill the criteria of a funder. So we try to run, at the minute we're running three consecutive programs, which is a first for us. We can only do that now because I have the time to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of ourselves, like there's a lot of other really good places doing some really good work. You have HURT, Have Your Tomorrows, Assert, Addiction NI. There's a lot of really good places out there that are offering help and support, Start 360. And everywhere is accessible online. Like you can find and access referral processes for these online. The reality is addiction's on the rise. COVID hasn't helped. More and more people are becoming dependent and there's more issues. So, there's going to be, higher demand for all of these services. But they're all accessible. You just have to look for them. And there's an app as well. Try to remember the name.
You had asked a lot of like trainers and other gyms around the town as well. They said to sort of help and support, and they were happy to kind of do whatever you needed.
We wouldn't have got as far as we've got a year and a half later if it wasn't for fundraising and support from the people here and there. Recently, Jay dragged a tire over the Foyle Bridge there. Raised a phenomenal amount of money, and that's people just recognizing that what we're doing is necessary and people need it. When we started, we didn't have a premises, and Pure Gym in Derry, run by Max Campbell, were phenomenal to us from the start. They let us run our first ever program out of their space.
Yeah,
and that's how it started. And it's got to the point we still, obviously COVID dependent, go back there once a month and use their facilities because it's bigger than our own premises.
Right.
They run bigger community orientated sessions.
I get you.
Which is really good. We're always in St Columb's Park. We're using a running track there. We use our running therapy sessions from St Columb's Park. But people have been so supportive, and there's a lot of gym owners out there. Danny Glenn, for example. Here, there's a space here if you ever need it. And we're not a competition for gyms because, there's a lot of gyms. That's not what we're here for. All right, what we do is a vehicle for recovery through exercise, but we're not a competition. So gym owners, they recognize that and they support what we do because we're like getting people fitter, healthier, and better.
That's it.
In
order to help you with the workload, is there any sort of people that you're looking for to kind of help with that at the minute, or is it just yourself?
No, we're very lucky now. They've been able to develop this. Now we now have a rota system for our coaches, which alleviates the pressure for me. But what happens is when the pressure comes off me from physically training people, the pressure increases from the operational side, and there's more and more funding applications that need to be done, or there's more things that then happen in the background. So It's like robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yes.
So it is. So it's great to have those extra days, but you can fill them all very quickly. For me, ideally, being able to do this full time makes the opportunities better. I have more capacity. I can run more classes, bigger classes. I can approach other organizations, you know, build more relationships. So at the minute, I'm restricted by the time that I have. But mm-hmm. I'd like to think, and I'm quite positive in thinking that it's not going to be that way for too much longer. We have mm-hmm. a few things going on in the background which are really, really exciting, which could see a lot of big changes. So we're, I'm not going to say too much, but fingers crossed that it looks a lot different in the start of the new year.
And where do you see where you'll be at in another 18 months? Yes. It'll be, you'll not know yourself.
Who knows?
You'll have AIDS in another 5 years.
Oh, dear. No, but you know what? It's been really exciting. But we couldn't have done what we've done without the support from the community. And
yeah.
That's a big thing. And I'm always really grateful for that. And quite thankful because, you know, we started this with a small amount of money and bought mm-hmm. some bars. And, you know, from then on, we've equipped it just based on the generosity of the people who see the value in what we're doing, Seamus. And that's why we do it, you know.
Yeah. Just as maybe a final, have you got your thought of the day on your phone or anything there? What was your thought of the day today?
Today's thought of the day. Today's thought of the day was about anger. Sometimes it's really funny, right? Because I do these thoughts of today and I think, oh, I feel really bad about myself because it makes me think about myself.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of them come from personal experiences and stuff like that. And I was actually thinking about one. I actually recorded it before you came in. They do for, not tomorrow, but the following day. And do you know what it was? It was actually about the people that help and support people that are struggling, like family members, partners, children. And it was encouragement to them that you're doing okay. Mm-hmm. This thing is hard. This thing is frustrating. As long as you're keeping healthy boundaries and continue to support and love, you're doing okay, you know. So that was me. That was a future thought for today.
Right.
But yeah, today was more geared towards younger people who are using substances like we were talking about to kind of dampen down, or what they feel like is dampening down those negative emotions like anger or aggression. Mm-hmm. And it actually makes it worse, you know, and nobody listens to you when you shout. Nobody listens to you when you stamp your feet. It's about learning to take a breath, take a step back, and then you can approach how you have a conversation, and people will hear you then.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the gist of today's stuff. For today.
I could go back and forward with you all day talking about this, man. I honest to God, I just think it's an amazing thing what you're doing, and I just hope it goes from strength to strength.
Thanks.
You just keep going, man. It's been a pleasure, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today as well. I really appreciate that. And for all the work that you're doing, it's amazing.
Seamus, thank you. You've been a supporter from the start, which is really good. And if you're listening, guys, if you are struggling yourself, or you know somebody in your life that's struggling, check us out on, like, we're on the internet, so www.arcfitness.co.uk. Or you'll find us on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or YouTube or all of that stuff. And we have a lot of resources and a lot of information there that can just maybe put your mind at ease or guide you in the right direction. So don't be afraid to check us out.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Seamus.
Cheers, buddy.